As a job hunter, we all want that great salary that pays us for what we're worth. That means we need to negotiate, right? But many of us find negotiating with an employer awkward and tricky. A study from the National Bureau of Economic Research indicates that women make up only 2.5% of the nation's highest salaries, in part because they often avoid negotiating for better pay. Company budgets can limit what employers can actually offer, and being a negotiator that's too aggressive can backfire. I'm Susan Wilson. On today's Central Standard, we'll answer questions about salary negotiation. What do we need to know before we go to the negotiating table? And what are some negotiating strategies that win us the respect and the cash we deserve? We'll be talking about being a savvy negotiator after the news. You've got experience and skills. You're knowledgeable and a hard worker, and they just offered you the job. But now the awkward part. You're just not sure what salary you should ask for and how you should go about getting the salary you think is fair. Maybe you've been out of work for a while. If you ask for too much, you're afraid they'll give the job to someone else. But then if you ask for too little, the impact of that decision can reverberate through your life. This is Central Standard, and I'm Susan Wilson. On today's show, we'll be talking about the importance of negotiating effectively when it comes to salary. Joining me today is Rania Anderson, president of The Way Women Work, and she provides online career advice for women. Rania, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you.
We're also joined today by Meg Montford from Abilities Enhanced. She joins us by phone from her office. Good morning, Meg.
Good morning, Susan. How are you today?
I'm fine. So I guess I'll start out by asking, you know, probably both of you have talked with a wide range of people, from those seeking entry-level positions to candidates for the C-suite, as they call it. What are some of the common issues you see in negotiation? Just generally.
I think some of the common issues that we see is that being prepared and not feeling like a negotiation is something that's going to be difficult, but rather viewing negotiation as a conversation that you're having with someone to reach an agreement. And I think if you have that mindset that both parties are trying to make something happen, and you go about it in that way, it changes your whole perspective about how you're going to encounter the conversation and prepare for it.
Meg, what about you? What do you see one or two of the most common threads that you see around negotiation?
I see that clients of mine, and I work with individuals, are somewhat threatened by salary negotiations. They're kind of in fear of it. They know what they need and forget that their need is not important to the company. It's what the company has as a need that is most important. So therefore, my client has to really focus in on the value that he or she has to offer the company, and that will determine the salary.
So, you know, part of the issue here, you know, we're coming out of a recession not too long ago. Meg, from your perspective, did the recession change the game in terms of negotiating? Are companies willing to negotiate again? Or is there not a lot of room for negotiation coming out of a recession?
I believe it's quite an individual situation thing. The recession did hurt negotiations. Now companies are lean and mean, so to speak. They are more focused on working on the least amount of expense that they have. So when it comes to negotiations, a person needs to be an interviewee needs to be on top of their game. They really need to be focused on what they have to bring to the company. And, of course, someone who is unemployed, unfortunately, has a little bit of a disadvantage compared to someone who is still employed.
And I guess that would be because companies view them as, you know, they need a job. So They have less negotiating power?
I believe that's pretty much true. It puts them at a disadvantage, unfortunately. It doesn't mean that they can't negotiate. They can always try. But a person who's been unemployed for any amount of time really needs to focus in on what's more important, the job or taking a little bit of a lesser salary.
Now, Rania, we've been talking about salary negotiations in general, but are some job or job categories easier to negotiate than perhaps others?
You might think so, but I would say negotiation depends on a lot of things, and Meg's brought up a really great point that I'll weave into this. It's all about the value that you bring to that job and to that opportunity. And if you have something, skills, experience, background that the employer wants, you're in a good position, whether you're employed or not employed. So it's always all about building your own skills and your own capabilities. So it can matter. Obviously, some jobs, some sectors are doing a lot better. Some companies are in much better financial condition. The key thing for the employee to think about, or the prospective employee to think about, is what do I bring to the table and how skilled am I for this job and how much does this employer need me in this role? And that's what sets the table for the negotiating conversation.
Now, Meg, are there differences in job sectors that people need to take into account when they're negotiating, for example, public versus private sector in terms of what salary expectations are, or not-for-profits for that matter?
I believe so. And like with any position a person is interested in interviewing for, they really need to do their research. They need to go online. God bless Google, shouldn't we say. You can find almost anything online on the internet. There are various websites that you can search for what is the basic salary, the average salary for a particular position in a particular geographic area. And once you know that, then you can figure out a range that you should fall into based upon your skills and qualifications, and then you're more prepared to negotiate.
Now, Rania, what are some common mistakes you see people make when they're negotiating?
The most common mistakes we see are twofold. One, that the employee is not prepared with the kind of information that Meg just referenced. They haven't done their homework. They don't know what these jobs pay or how the company is doing, how long the position has been open, what are their ranges already set for these roles. For example, in some government kinds of roles, there's definitive ranges set. So they haven't done their homework. And two, they focus more on their needs rather than their value. They're talking about the things that they need to, you know, the amount of money they need to live or the amount of money they need to make versus the amount of value they bring to the employer. I would say those are the two greatest. And then thirdly, they don't come into the conversation asking for what it is they want, and they just sit back and let the employer take control rather than seeing themselves as an equal party to the conversation.
Now, why do you think that is? Why do people kind of sit back and are passive in a negotiation?
I think they're intimidated, they're fearful, maybe they don't think they have a right to ask for that, maybe they've been out of a job and they think they should just take whatever is offered. Or lastly, and I see this a lot, I'm sure Meg does too, people think that the employer is coming forward with the very best offer, and that wouldn't that be the number? If the employer says, I can pay you $30,000 or $40,000, isn't that what they can pay you? And the reality is that employer is looking at all their expenses, often personnel expenses being the greatest part of that. So they're trying to do the best thing they can do for their company, and you're trying to do the best thing you can do for yourself. So there's always an opportunity to open up a conversation.
Now, Meg, how about you? Any other mistakes that you see that people make?
I think one of the biggest ones is not taking time to consider an offer. There's no rule that says you have to negotiate and accept an offer on the spot. It's perfectly okay to ask for 24 to 48 hours to think about it. And just remember that silence can be golden. If you just let the silence hang there for a while, you don't have to rush to fill the void. And usually the person that fills the void loses. So that's just a little tip there. But the research part, I agree with Rania, is so important. You have to research to know what typical salaries are in your geographic locale for that position. Don't ask for the moon. You don't have to settle for the bottom of the line, but you have to feel comfortable too. And the other thing is, if you do set into a negotiation on a salary, you got to be prepared to walk away. That may come to that, and so you have to be able to do that. But the negotiation part really happens when an employer has already made the offer, not before. And some people forget that. Once they've made the offer, the employer has kind of put out a little bit of a commitment there. You don't want to ignore that, and you don't want to dishonor that. At the same time, they want you. So now they've put their hand out. It's up to you to figure out if what they say in a way of an offer is good for you, or whether or not you need time to figure out what is a better offer that you could be happy living with.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Susan Wilson. Our guest today is Rania Anderson, president of The Way Women Work. And we're also joined by Meg Montford from Abilities Enhanced. And we're discussing a hot topic, negotiating your salary. Kansas City, what has been your experience negotiating salaries? Have you encountered any problems? And what did you learn that you can share with others? Join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Now, both of you have mentioned the importance of doing research, but and we talked about Google, but what's your advice to people who might ask the question, well, how reliable is Google? Are there some salary sites that are more accurate than others, more trustworthy than others? Rania?
So there are lots of sites, and we could mention a few, and I'm sure Meg has others, salary.com, payscale.com, glassdoor.com. So there are sites specifically, but I'm going to suggest something in addition to that, or I am going to suggest something in addition to that. You know, it used to be people would say, don't talk with other people about your salary. And I say there's nothing wrong with that. And so if you have a good network and you're constantly looking at the market and understanding what your value is, you are talking to people about their salary. Not maybe in very specific numbers, but you're talking to your peers, you're understanding from others what they're being paid for their role in general and range terms, and that is also helping you to collect information. There's nothing wrong with exploring salary and learning more about what people make in certain roles to help you make the right decisions for yourself.
But can't that be kind of an awkward question to ask someone? You know, what do you make, by the way? Don't you have to kind of know who you're asking or have some type of relationship? And isn't that a problem because maybe someone doesn't have those kind of relationships with someone they could ask?
If they don't, obviously that's going to be a challenge. It is an awkward conversation, but I think it's one that it is good to learn how to have. And it's more an exploratory conversation around, I'm gathering information about market value for certain roles. What can you tell me about what you know? People are getting paid. You can start in a more general way. And obviously, if you have a close colleague in a similar role at a different company, then you could ask more of that role. Obviously, as you ask that conversation, you've got to understand and factor in what is that person's education? How long have they been working? What is their value to their company? Where are they working? And those are all different parameters that factor in. Just because they're making a certain amount doesn't mean that's what you're entitled to making. It's just another frame of reference.
Now, Meg, anything else you'd like to add about making sure you're getting accurate information when you do your research on the internet or otherwise?
Well, I totally agree with Rania, first of all. And what she's pretty much talking about is networking. And networking is the key to not only salary negotiation, but getting the best job opportunities. And if you're serious about finding a job, you are doing your networking, and you live your whole career doing your networking. You stay in touch with everyone. I have a personal example I can share, if you'd like, where I worked with someone several years ago who was determined to get into a certain large company here in the Kansas City area. And she knew from her networking with individuals in the company that the offer she received was $5,000 less than what she knew the others were making at her grade level there in the company. So we worked on a counteroffer letter thanking the company for its offer to her and recapped why they said they wanted her, and then enthusiastically proclaimed her desire to join their team. And that was provided they would reconsider the amount of their offer. And she knew it was a risk, and she was prepared to walk away, and they did come back with a salary offer bumped up by $4,000. It wasn't quite $5,000, but she was happy, and she took the job.
Well, that's a very savvy strategy, I would say. You know, one of the things that always comes up is starting salary. Why is starting salary so important? What do we need to know, Rania?
Starting salary is the basis, it seems like it and often is, the basis for which your salary is based for the rest of your career. I was actually working with someone last night who's been at a company, and all her salary, she's been at that company for a while. Every promotion is based on that starting salary. When she started with that company, she came in during very hard economic times, and she took maybe a slightly lower salary than ordinarily she would have received. And now you can't get away from 10% of this and 20% of that. And so it's critically important unless you can ultimately change an employer's mindset. I'd like to say one other thing regarding that, and it's on the gender side. What research has shown, Catalyst research has shown, is that women still, given the same experience and the same education, often start their first jobs at lower salaries than their male counterparts with the same experience.
Is this part of what leads to what we see in the research also, is the salary gap between men and women?
Absolutely, it's a part of it. So for women especially, that starting salary is critically important. One other thing that we know is that in 80% of cases, if you ask for a higher salary, you will get a higher salary.
Huh. So for the people who think, well, if I ask, they'll think less of me or I won't get it, that's just not true, right?
That's correct.
Rania, what do you say about this in terms of starting salary? The importance?
Are you asking?
I'm sorry, Meg.
That's okay. No problem. I totally agree with Rania, again. It seems like we're on the same page on this discussion. The starting salary does set the tone for that particular company, for that individual. And that's one of the reasons, I think, why you find nowadays a lot of people are not staying with companies that long, because they can get more money by moving to other companies. So I believe the average time on a job right now is somewhere between 3 and 5 years. Not a job, but at a company is 3 to 5 years. And when you move, lots of times you'll get bumped up. That happened to me personally many years ago. Wasn't changing the roles that much, but by moving from one place to another, I bumped my salary by $7,000 a year.
Because I guess part of what you're saying is once you accept that lower salary and once you're in the job, it becomes harder and harder to get that salary up to the level that you think that you deserve.
Exactly, especially with that same company. And so to increase your salary, lots of times you have to move on.
So, but what people often encounter this, that at the very beginning of a job interview process, someone might be asked, so what are your salary expectations? How should you respond to this? I mean, because I can see that if you lowball, that might set the stage for a different kind of negotiation as opposed to if you ask for what you deserve. But there's always the risk that you might be bumped out of the mix, right?
Right. And that's a very tough situation for anybody to be in. I've seen it happen again and again. What I try to coach my people on is not focusing on an individual figure, but maybe a range. If they're forced into showing their hand at the beginning of the interviewing process, even at the end, if you're offered a job, lots of times the range works better than an individual figure. And another thing to take into consideration are the benefits. And talk about total package compensation instead of just salary.
Now, we have someone who called us, and JJ, and he said that he was in a negotiation for a sales job when a potential employer backed out because during the negotiation, the employer said his inflection was not what they were looking for. What tone and inflection should be used when you're negotiating? Is there a time when maybe you can be perceived as too aggressive, too hardball? So, Rania, what would you advise about that?
What's important is to first decide whether you want the job. You really want the job. You want to work for these people. You want to do that kind of work and to see it from a broader perspective. Are there opportunities for growth there? So irrespective of salary, first you've got to decide, is this the job for me? Once you've determined that, then your role is to continually express the fact that you want to join this employer, you want to make a contribution, you have value to bring, and to keep bringing to the forefront what your skills and contributions are to this employer, and couch the salary and benefits, as Meg said, that's a critically important piece, looking at the entire thing, in terms of that. When you do that, I think you will not run the risk of looking like you're being overly aggressive. You're just looking at the entire opportunity and of which salary is a part of it.
Now, Meg, JJ was talking about tone and inflection. Are there certain tones and inflection that color the way you negotiate that might have you perceived the wrong way?
To a certain extent, I think so. And I specialize in working with sales and marketing people. So as a rule, I would say for them to be successful on their jobs, they have to be aggressive. But at the same time, in a salary negotiation, I would tone it down to assertive. And there is a difference, a fine line difference between the two words.
Talk about that a little bit.
Aggressive can be perceived as pushy, demanding, you owe this to me type of attitude, where assertive is playing the game, is putting yourself out there and with self-confidence, showing people that you know what you want and you know what you believe you're worth, and therefore this is what you believe you should have in the way of money. It's for salespeople, sometimes it's a little bit different game, shall we say, when you're considering yourself as your own best product and you're trying to sell it to a potential employer.
Now, Rania, a lot of the success in negotiating kind of rests on interpersonal skills. And, you know, some people have them and some people not as much. What are some of the basic kinds of interpersonal skills that a person needs to sharpen up or draw upon if they want to be a good negotiator? Because this caller was talking about tone and inflection as a part of that.
I think the first part is thinking the mindset you have around a negotiation, that it's not a win-lose, that you're not trying to get something and trying to make the employer lose something. If you view it as a conversation leading to an agreement, I use that terminology a lot when I talk to people. A negotiation is a conversation leading to an agreement. Then you take the tone of trying to work toward a solution that works for both parties. And that is the tone, that's the perspective you want to take. Earlier as well, we talked about saying less is more. I'll give an example. I was working with someone a couple of weeks ago, and she was offered a job and a starting salary. And her answer was, that's too low. Mm-hmm. End of conversation, end of discussion. So you don't need to say 100 words. You can say 3. That's mm-hmm. too low. And then let the employer come back and begin the conversation again.
Now, Meg, are there certain negotiating techniques that you would recommend that people practice before they go into a negotiation?
Boosting their own self-confidence, maintaining their composure. Sometimes it helps to work with a partner or a coach on that to role play a little bit. Knowing what you value yourself at, and like I said earlier, knowing when it's time to walk away, the whole aggressive versus assertive thing is very important. Don't be demanding. And I like what Rania says about conversation leading to an agreement. I think that's a great way to sum up the negotiation.
Well, those are really good tips that I think a lot of people can benefit from. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we'll be talking about skills and techniques that you can continue to use to improve your bargaining position. Central Standard returns in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Susan Wilson. Today we're talking about how to prepare yourself to negotiate the best salary possible with Rania Anderson of The Way Women Work, and also with Meg Montro of Enhancing Abilities. Kansas City, do you think you know how to negotiate the best salary? Tell us your experience. What stories can you share about negotiating salary? And do you think women face any special problems negotiating salary? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888, or tweet us at KCURCST. Now, speaking of, we talked some about when someone asks you what's your salary range, but sometimes the application has what salary do you require? Should you ever answer that question, Rania?
I think if the application is requiring you to do that, somehow you'll have to. But if you can get away with it, I think it's helpful to say a salary that's commensurate with the value of this role. And I often also caution people in a conversation not to spend a lot of time or start with what they're making today at their current role, but rather talking about what the employer pays for this role and what they see as fitting in with the rest of the salaries they pay their employees. Because especially if you're a young person and you've just come out of school, you've been working for a few years, and now you've learned some skills, you might be ready for that big jump in salary that Meg talked about earlier, that $7,000 raise, and you don't want to keep talking about your old salary. What you want to talk about is what does the current job that you're looking at pay?
Now, we've talked some about the gender gap and the fact that women get less money when they negotiate. So what are the specific differences, Rania, that you see between the way that women negotiate and the way that men negotiate?
And we're generalizing, but what we know is that women typically don't negotiate. Only in 20% of cases do women negotiate for their first for when they're taking a job. Most typically, women, when offered a job, will take it at the salary that it was offered. Women often view salary as reward and recognition rather than an entitlement, something that is around the value of what they should be making. So those are two things. And perhaps they lack some confidence in asking for what they want.
So we've all talked about this whole thing called negotiation is a process. What's the process? Demystify the process, because there's different phases that people should be aware of when they're negotiating, right? Meg?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
My fault.
I believe that there is a process, and you have to be able to recognize the process. So I suggest reading up on salary negotiations, books, online articles, anything like that, and you can learn a lot about what the process generally is. The main thing is, which we have already covered, I believe, is to not tip your hand before you have to. And what Rania was saying about applications, job applications, is so true. However, today it seems like companies, a lot of them are asking people to declare their salary up front. And it doesn't seem fair, but there really isn't anything fair about the whole interview process, I don't believe. So the process itself, try to delay it, try to get it to the end, and then let the employer be the one to mention salary first. And like I said earlier, the one who fills the void is usually the one who loses, and the one who speaks about salary first lots of times loses too. It's hard to put all the steps into the process because it does change so much from individual situation to the next. But the whole idea behind it is to listen. I would say listening skills come into play more than anything else. And second to listening would be communication skills. And we covered so much about that already regarding voice tone and that type of thing.
Well, I have heard that people kind of jump the gun right in the first interview and begin asking a lot of questions about salary. Rania, that's probably the wrong approach, right?
Definitely, and maybe going back to that email we received, if you're starting the conversation around salary or you jumped the gun, the employer has the feeling that the only reason you want the job is around money, that you're not interested in being committed, being a part of the team, making a contribution, having a career there, or spending a good amount of time there. So it's not a good idea to talk about salary first. Obviously, you want to do your homework so that you're not wasting your time talking to someone when the salary they have to offer you is not at all what you have in mind. You would do that before you even engaged in the conversation with them.
So, Rania, is there specific advice that you give women about negotiating that might be slightly different than perhaps you would give men? Again, well, not to generalize, but
I don't know that it's different advice. I just seem to give it more often. And that is, I'm going to take us back one step. If you're going to be a good negotiator for salary, you should practice negotiation in lots of things. You should ask for what you want in your current role. You should practice asking for things that you know you can get pretty easily, so you become more experienced in just asking for what you want and you expect. So that's one piece of advice I give. I give women the advice of not apologizing for what they're asking for, because sometimes women start with that or they try to explain, and not negotiating against themselves. And what I mean by that is, if you do throw out a number, if you do ask for something, you don't need to come back very quickly behind it and say, but I'm open to negotiation. You should just make your statement and stick with that. And as Meg has said, let the silence sit there for a moment.
Now, Meg, there are those people listening to us. They're on the job. Maybe they negotiated too low. They figured out that the work that they're being asked to do is more entailed than even they originally thought, and probably worth more money. How do they go about reopening the discussion about money on a job they're already on, Meg?
I would say the best time to do that is at annual performance review time. And to initiate that conversation, to do a performance appraisal where you spell out all the things that you have accomplished with this company, all the extra things you have done, and have that with you when you go into your review. It's very difficult as a rule, I think, to get a boost in salary except at the specified time that the company gives those raises.
Rania, what if the employer says no? You know, either we're not making money this year, or they might say, you know, your performance is not what we thought we would see. What advice do you give then?
I think it's difficult if your performance is not up to par. So that you've got to make sure that you have good performance. If the employer says we're not giving raises, or I don't think that it's going to happen this year, the question for you as the employee is to ask, what will it take in order for me to get a raise next year? Or could we look at this in 3 months? Or I'd like to look at this in 6 months. How do we go about doing that? And while, yes, the conversation occurs usually at merit increase time, my advice to everyone working is to think about your salary and what you want to make, and have those conversations in a general way with your manager throughout the year. You don't want to hit them cold all of a sudden with the fact that you think you should make a higher salary. You want to be setting the stage for that throughout the year by talking about your expectations, by talking about your contributions, like Meg said, by talking about the additional things you're doing, and by asking them the question, what will you need to show them in order for you to get a salary increase that you believe is deserved for that role?
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Susan Wilson, and our guest today are Rania Anderson from The Way Women Work and Meg Montford from Abilities Enhanced. Kansas City, what questions do you have today about negotiating a fair market salary? What have you tried that worked or backfired? Let us know by calling us 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur, just like Emily just did. She writes in an email, many of us who face long-term unemployment find that they're not considered for positions, that they may be overqualified because employers fear they'll quickly resign when a better job presents itself. How do you ask for what you're worth when you're unemployed and communicate that you see yourself being there long term? Meg, how would you answer this question?
That is so tough. That is so tough. One of the biggest things is to stay active while you're unemployed so you have things to build your resume with. And by that I mean volunteer, get involved, try to volunteer your skills and abilities in a way that reflects back on what it is you want to do for a career. And if you can build your resume to include volunteer experience to cover the gap since your last job, that will be considered when you go in for a job. accepting a job that's less than what you believe you deserve, or even trying to get a job, the employer, I agree, will lots of times say, wait a minute, you're overqualified, and you'll leave us. It's still a matter of communication, mm-hmm. of discussing with the employer, you know, that you can commit to them for a certain period of time, perhaps.
Another email from Prisca also addresses this issue of, you know, when do you walk away? She says, when an offer is made and a salary is given and you counteroffer and then they say they're not able to pay you more, do you just accept it? When does their no really mean no? Or how far do you go to pursue this issue? What would you say, Rania?
Sometimes when the employer says no to your counteroffer, what you want to think about is what else can you negotiate for? And that's something that employees don't think often about. Look at their benefits package. How much vacation are they giving or not giving? Do you want a more flexible schedule, and could you ask for that? Are there things that, you know, perks or other things that you want that you could ask for? And see if you can't get more of what you want by looking at that entire package, not just at the salary. And again, it goes back to how much do I want this job?
Right. How much is it worth it to you? Let's take a call now from Daryl from the Northland. Good morning, Daryl. Welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Good. My first comment is that I've done this several times. I have turned down a position after spending flying out to Dallas, flying out to Colorado, and a job offer was made, and I said, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate your interest in my resume, my experience, but I really have a better job offer, and I did, in Dallas and in Colorado, and I got a better job. I got a much better offer on money and from the people trying to hire me, and I didn't go to either position because I got a better offer.
Oh, so it's
yeah.
Go ahead. So it's part of the moral of this story that people need to have several different offers on the table with maybe other employers to be in the best negotiating position. Meg?
I think that doesn't hurt sometimes, but you can also lose if you try to play too many against each other. It does seem to increase your value, but employers don't forget either if you try to play them against each other. So be careful sometimes on stipulating or on putting out there to all the different employers that you are juggling offers. I think it can work against you probably more than for you. In this situation that we just heard, it seemed to work good for him, work well for him. So I congratulate him on that. But I've seen it backfire, too.
And be prepared also that when you throw that card out there of saying, I have another offer, that employer will say, great, go ahead and take that other offer, and be sure you want that other offer and not the one of, you know, of the party that you're negotiating with. But obviously, it does work. It can work. And it's back to having a network and having skills and having opportunities where you are in demand obviously puts you in a better position.
You do have to, it sounds like, be a little careful with that one, though. I think the caller had an additional question about negotiating around benefits such as time off. What have you seen there? How firm or how flexible are employers, Meg, when you're negotiating those other kinds of benefits?
Really depends on the employer and how much they want you again. It's really difficult to generalize on that. But I will throw out there one other benefit that I think wasn't mentioned, and that's telecommuting. that seems to be something that more and more employers are allowing their employees to do. And if you ask for it, you might just get it if your job can be done, say, on a laptop from home.
How about you, Rania? What have you seen in that area of negotiating benefits or maybe some perks that we don't often think about?
I think negotiating benefits work a lot better in some cases in smaller employers or mid-sized employers where there is more flexibility. In very large firms, at certain levels, there are pretty standard benefits, and the employer is going to stick with that. We give all X level of employees 3 weeks of vacation or whatever it is, and they can't do so much for you. I think thinking about benefits in the way that Meg was just talking about in terms of telecommuting, in terms of the things that you feel are important to you, time off, wanting to go spend an hour a week volunteering at your child's school or coaching soccer or doing something, those are also benefits. And so think of those things that maybe are not in the traditional benefits package of just healthcare, dental care, time off, and more in the realm of flexibility and living the kind of life you want to lead that includes your work, and ask for those kinds of things.
Now, Steve emailed us a nice tip, I think, about how to negotiate salary raises. He says, I keep an accomplishment journal, a log, or just a basic text document. Each time I have an accomplishment that contributes to greater success, I note the date, the situation, and what I did that had some major, measurable, tangible outcome for the company. And he brings this list, he says, to the performance review, which really alleviates anxiety about asking for more money. What do you think about this approach, Rania?
I think it's a great approach and one that I recommend all the time. What was really powerful about that example was it wasn't just what he accomplished, but the contribution that it made to the organization. And that's what the company is looking for. How did what you did help us? Susan, I want to add one more benefit that I just thought of, which is an important one, and that's around training or professional development. That's something you can also ask for that will help you keep your skills sharp in the long term and benefit you in the future.
So let's take a caller. Kelly, good morning and welcome to Central Standard from KCK. Hi, Kelly.
Good morning.
You had a question.
Yes, I was calling in. It seems like most of the program was geared towards people with experience and a large work history. And I'm definitely going through what one would call the post-grad crisis. And I feel like I have absolutely no leverage, and I just have to take what is given to me at this point.
Now, is Kelly right? When you're right out of school or have little experience, is your negotiating position pretty weak at that point, Meg?
Pretty much so, I'm afraid, Kelly. however, there are things you can do, and one is to, if you are looking for a job in your field that you majored in college, be sure to emphasize any volunteer work, any coursework, anything that you did related to your field while you were in school. It can help a lot. And be sure that when you're doing your resume, you lead with your education so that those things are found right up at the top of the resume. And look at job postings for that particular position in other places in the country so that you can gather the right keywords to put into that resume to make sure that when it is stored in a database at an employer, they will be able to pull it up when it's time to interview based on keyword search.
And Rania, you know, Kelly is talking about being right out of school, but I imagine if you were a stay-at-home mom or you hadn't been in the workforce for a while, you might face the same issue. What kind of advice do you give?
Kelly, I think, you know, it's hard to answer this question without knowing what field you're in and what education you know, what your degree is in, and certainly some people right out of school, engineers, have a lot of negotiating room today, or people with technology. So it sort of depends. I'm going to go back to two things. A, your network and knowing people who have similar skills and experience as you and where they're working, and learning more about what they're getting paid and what they're doing, and using that as leverage. And two, thinking about the opportunity, not just in terms of pay, but what you can bring to that employer. And not worrying so much about whether you have any room to negotiate, but rather looking at what's the best opportunity that I can do to start my career.
Yeah, because I remember being in her position, and sometimes, yes, you took jobs, you knew the pay wasn't great, but you got a wealth of experience that ended up landing you that job later on that you really wanted. So as we kind of move to the end here, is there anything we haven't talked about that you think is important to share, Meg, about negotiating?
Well, I think we've covered it pretty thoroughly. In recap, I guess I would just say know what you want, know the value of what you have to offer, and approach it according to what Rania says is a conversation leading to an agreement. I think that is a good way to summarize the whole thing.
And how about you, Rania?
Just a reminder to everyone that you have an opportunity to negotiate your pay, whether you're starting a job or already in a role. So don't give up that opportunity to start that conversation.
Well, I'd like to thank our guest today for joining us, Rania Anderson, president of The Way Women Work, providing online career advice for women, and Meg Montford from Abilities Enhanced. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Susan.
You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from Central Standard on the page of kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we discuss the distinction between mind and body and where those things collide. Up next on Up to Date is a conversation with novelist Joyce Maynard and a look at the social media policy for faculty at KU. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. I'm Susan Wilson. This is KCUR. Keep listening.